I still haven't played Silent Hill. Actually, why? Just at all. I don't know. I played some of the Silent Hill 2, I think it was a remake on the 360 forever ago, but I never got very far in it. And
so Silent Hill was such an like overrated game, but in the best possible way.
It's weird because it seems like it would be extremely my shit.
I've played Dead by Daylight, where you could be Pyramid Head, but then they made his ass less. They nerfed his ass. And that's homophobic.
It is.
It is 100% homophobic.
You are absolutely correct about that. How dare they? I'm never going to play that game again.
We should probably introduce ourselves or something.
I'm boycotting Dead. No, hold on. You tell me that there's ass nerfing and you expect me to just segue into show? No.
Yes, I do.
You can't do this.
I'm demanding it. The cold open still requires a regular intro.
Yeah, whatever.
Get ready.
Hello. Welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace, your host.
And I'm Paul Henderson, your sometimes semi-regular, mostly lately in absentia, guestish host.
And if you're joining us for the first time, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week, and we get to know our guest. It is episode 131 of the Weekly Cooldown. It is June 25th.
And like I want to start by issuing... Week. I want to start by issuing an apology. I'm sorry I haven't been here for like a month. Right after I talked to Jace and like made a whole big deal about how I'm going to be a semi-permanent host and I'm going to be here every week and it's going to be super awesome. I started a new job at Blizzard like a week later. And adjusting to my new schedule and getting everything set up there, I've missed the last several recordings. Yep. But I'm hoping now that I'm more settled in, it's been a couple weeks, I'm going to try and make a valiant effort to show up to these more regularly and maintain my semi-regular title and not just make it... I'm going to try and keep the semi out of semi-regular if I can.
You're coming in on a very kind of... interesting episode because I will be starting a new job pretty soon, which means I'm also going to be moving to a new city, which means that I'm going to take a little break from this. So they're hearing you for the first time in a while, and it's going to be the last time for a while as well because we're taking a break. We're going to take a break unless Paul wants to like pick it up.
Yeah,
on his own.
Jace and I have talked about me possibly taking over the show for a month while Jace gets settled in. Not sure if I'm going to be able to do that or not yet. I'm sure, keep an eye on social media. We'll let you know if it's going to happen.
Yeah, keep your eyes open. That being said, welcome back, Paul. It's nice to have you.
It's good to be here.
But we have a guest who's more important, so we're going to let them introduce themselves.
Hi. I'm Big in Danger, and maybe this is my podcast now.
Oh, that's true.
Well...
I'm busy. Yikes. Kami Jace is starting a new job. I think you're taking over.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is now the Weekly Cooldown with Megan Danger for the foreseeable, you know? Great. I'll keep it for warm till you get back.
Hey, you know what? That's not a bad idea. Don't
it'll
tempt
be like,
me.
It'll be like that period of time when Jon Stewart left The Daily Show and they weren't sure who was going to host it for a while, so they just like rotated through all the correspondents until they picked one.
That would be a good idea if I had correspondents, but I don't. Not that popular yet.
Someday,
we'll get there.
Someday.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
I mean, this is how it starts. Thank you for having me.
And, of course. Well,
and
we
and
have to
letting
talk
me
about
threaten what, to take over your podcast.
Usurp the throne. Well, we have to get into what it is you do. So what is it, Megan Danger, that you do?
Podcast mostly.
Go on.
I'm never good at that. I always do it badly. I do the head every goddamn time.
Take your time.
Yeah. The main thing that I do right now is a tabletop role-playing slash audio drama comedy horror podcast called The Weird that I do with two other co-hosts. And we made the game. We wrote the game ourselves. It's in the Powered by the Apocalypse system. It takes place in the 90s. It's, oh God, what's the tagline we came up with? It's like the Magnus Archives, but funny, the X-Files, but worse, and Gravity Falls, but pretty much the same.
Very good. Very good. If you're a listener of this podcast, you've probably heard the ad for The Weird before. It is a really great podcast.
You're lovely and wonderful.
Yeah.
And then I also do a show called Fun Fiction with Scotty Moore, who's also on The Weird and who has 20 million other podcasts where we ruin that thing you like by writing weird fanfics about it.
Oh, I love that. Going back to your tabletop podcast, I have some questions about the format. I'll be honest, Jace is probably more familiar with them than I am. I usually come in blind with the guests. What is it formatted like? Is it like you do the tabletop and then you re-record stuff? Do you add sound effects? Is it all just raw audio? What can you expect to hear whenever you listen to your tabletop podcast?
It is very heavily sound designed.
Awesome.
That's why we have like the slash audio drama part. We do a lot of editing after the fact. Like, we keep in, you know, like, some of the gags and the screw-ups and whatnot. Sure. But, yeah, no. Charles, our other co-host, who's kind of he's, like, the GM and also the one who wrote most of it. He does all the sound design, and, it sounds dope as hell.
Is it,
yes.
Tell me if you're not familiar with these podcasts. Is it edited kind of like, Rusty Quill Gaming? Is it more on like if you're familiar with the Liberty series of podcasts where they like replace all the voice actor, all the players, the DM is actually replaced by a voice actor? Is it like to that extreme? Is it more like Rusty Quill Gaming? Yeah. Maybe somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, no, it's not. It is literally just three. It's us three dipshits.
That's awesome.
It's great. It's a really great show. And
thank you.
I urge everyone, if you have not already, to check it out, but only after you listen to this episode and subsequently whatever other episode you might be listening to. So yeah, do that first. Anyway,
this first.
If you've been listening to the show for the past couple of weeks, you know that it is gay month. We are on like the last stretch of gay month. And it's time to kind of it's time to kind of wrap it up. Megan here is going to help us wrap up Gay Month, and we're going to talk about queer awakenings yet again. We've had some very interesting queer awakenings. Paul, I'm expecting you to participate in this as well.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's not as interesting as you might hope, though.
Well, it's still going to be fun. Fair. So the question is, essentially, everyone, it seems, has had some kind of queer awakening with regards to media for the most part. For some of us, it's games. For some of us, it's TV. For some of us, it's Legos and Build-A-Blocks and engineer toys and stuff like that. So, Megan, where is your awakening? What was it? When did you notice it? Or how did it manifest? Yes. How did it manifest?
Gosh. Okay. So mine's kind of like a good double header, actually.
Cause, a good baseball metaphor.
So I was playing baseball. No. Sports? What? Yeah, no, I'm a cool jock, you know, what with all of my gaming podcasts.
Not a nerd.
Yeah. I mean, like, in real life, it took a good long while, but in media, I don't know, I was probably, like, 12, 11, 13, something like that. And so I'm bi and non-binary, and like many bisexuals before me, I was watching Xena Warrior Princess.
Ah, say no more. But also like, keep talking.
Yeah, it's almost like we know where this is going.
So, well, because that's the thing. It's specifically Lucy Lawless and Bruce Campbell.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Because he plays like the King of Thieves on Xena.
Mm-hmm.
And they had episodes together, and like my little baby brain would be like, wait. Like this?
That's Bruce Campbell?
Yeah.
Holy shit. That looks nothing like him.
Certainly is.
90s Bruce Campbell is a mood.
It's the facial hair that's throwing me off. Anyway.
Yeah. My lizard hindbrain was like, I'm going to table this for several years. We will come back to this at a later mm-hmm. date. And then it was also like a thing of realizing that I did not want to be Xena. I did super want to date Xena.
Sure.
And then like, definitely wanted to date Bruce Campbell, and then it's like, but did I want to be Bruce Campbell a little bit? Maybe, I don't know. And then that kind of evolved to just sort of like, no, we just want to throw the whole gender thing kind of out the window. Yeah. But we do kind of want to masquerade as Bruce Campbell sometimes, because honestly, who among us doesn't want to occasionally?
Sure.
Very good.
I wish it was a longer story.
I mean, it doesn't have to be. The quality of your awakening is truly what we're looking for, not the quantity. So, very, very good, very good. We do appreciate Lucy Lawless, more than we can say here on this podcast. And we truly appreciate Bruce Campbell as well. Again, more than we can say on this podcast. Did you know that the Ash versus Evil Dead video game is actually pretty good.
I have not checked it out. I was going to say that then they have a reunion on the Ash versus Evil Dead.
They did.
Show. Yeah, which. Oh God, she is.
It was.
She it was great, and she has aged like a fine wine.
Mm-hmm. You are absolutely right. She's wonderful. She's great. She knows it. Paul, let's shift the gears. What's going on?
It's interesting. So, first of all, some diving into the adjectives that are currently attached to me. I am a polyamorous pansexual demiguy, and I figured out all that stuff about a year and a half ago. I'm 27.
Yeah.
It was about 2 years ago I figured out the pansexual thing. It was about 2.5 years ago I figured out the polyamorous thing. It was about a year and a half ago I figured out the demi-guy thing. And so, basically, there was no fictional awakening for me when it comes to pretty much any of that. It wasn't really until I discovered I had a crush on a male friend of mine when I was like, oh shit, all right, there's something going on here. And I had conversations with myself about it for years, even in high school. Like, I had a conversation with a friend of mine who I know I could trust. I was like, hey, I think I might like guys, I'm not sure, but like, it was in the abstract. I never had like a moment where I was like, I actually like a guy. It was just like a hypothetical. If there was a guy that came along, this is what I always told myself. I told myself I was straight. But if the right guy came along, fuck it, why not? If it happens, it happens. And there was a good friend of mine, Ryan Hoyle. I was having a conversation about this not long before I
friend
dated
of the show,
my,
Ryan Hoyle.
My at-the-time boyfriend. And I basically was like, hey, I have a crush on this friend of mine, but I don't know what it's about. And Ryan basically just took me aside and it was just like, listen, honey, darling, That's the internalized homophobia. Don't even worry about it. Just get over that shit and you'll be right as rain. And I was like, ah, fuck, he's right. It is the internalized homophobia. That doesn't even make sense. I have gay parents. How am I supposed to be homophobic? And then I realized, no, I'm not homophobic against other people. I'm just homophobic against myself. All right, well, once I solved that puzzle and realized what was going on there, I was able to go, all right, well, fuck that. I'm gay now. I'm gay as shit now. And so I came to terms with the fact that I knew I wasn't straight up gay because, like, I liked women too much. And so it was like, I was like, all right, a bisexual? The bisexual doesn't feel right for me. Pansexual, yeah, that kind of dips more into...
That gels better.
Mm-hmm. It sort of gels better because when it comes to, like, people that I'm into, especially now that I've come to greater terms with myself, I'm kind of omnivorous. There's not really a limit in one direction or another. And so I think, for, at least for me, bisexual is probably a good term, but pansexual just feels more appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And so after I realized I was pansexual and got over myself, that was when the real fun started. Because suddenly I was like, oh, I can allow myself to feel things about fictional guys now. I can be interested in that. And suddenly Soul Bad Guy from Guilty Gear became really hot.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, boy.
Now, to be clear, I wasn't really into Guilty Gear until before that point. But, like, I realized that there were fictional characters that I found attractive that I knew that I know 3 years ago. There's no way I would have been remotely into. Like, all the girls I liked were still girls that I liked. Like, if I saw an attractive girl in an anime or something, I'd be like, hell yeah. But now, like, I see a beefy boy and I'm like, okay. Okay, I see what's happening here. So it's like suddenly I get it really into Guilty Gear, and after playing it for a few months, I'm like, oh, you know, Soul Bad Guy's got a big chest, and I'm a big fan of that. That's really good for me. That's really good for me. Leo Whitefang has got a lot of hair, and I'm a big fan of a lot of hair.
So, oh my god.
And so my sexual awakening didn't come as a result of media, but my sexual awakening has certainly enhanced my enjoyment of media going forward, because I love them beefy, beefy trash boys.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Excellent.
You know what's an awesome game for all of the bi and or pan folks out there?
What's that?
Give it fucking to us. Hades.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my god.
Absolutely.
They make every single character in the game and also Hypnos is there so attractive? Holy shit.
There is no disputing this fact. It is a
Hades
fact
got a little really something through. For everybody.
And also, if you're into bratty twinks, Hypnos is also there.
Hypnos is there, too.
There's truly something for everyone.
Truly.
Very good. Very good. Very good. We appreciate both of those answers very much. Now, for myself, I've actually never shared my own awakenings with people. So this, as it is going to be the last episode for a while, at least for me, I thought it might be a good idea to do so. So, getting right into it, I am black, I am gay, but I grew up in a very kind of, not necessarily a closed-minded household, but, you know, like any other household, it's not something you really think about, talk about with others, etc., etc., etc. Mine came pretty early, now that I think about it, and it largely dealt with the Power Rangers. I was a Power Rangers fanboy when I was a child. I loved the Blue and Green Rangers in particular, did not know why, and also the Black Ranger, for kind of separate reasons, but the Blue and Green Rangers really spoke to me for some reason, and it wasn't until, I think in my teens, I saw a picture of the Green Ranger, who was played by Jason David Frank, in a like very tight, snug red shirt, and I was like, okay, there's something happening there. Likewise, the Blue Ranger, who was played by David Yost, I hope I'm saying that correctly, is actually a gay person, and I didn't learn that until much later either, and I always found him kind of conventionally attractive, I also have a thing for glasses, so he he wore the glasses in on the team. So he hit a lot of marks for me that I did not know he was hitting at the time. But lo and behold, my two favorites, the green and the blue. I heard he got,
like, bullied on set.
He did. He was bullied on set. He went through conversion therapy, which did not work. Yeah, a lot of things. Actually, kind of, not that I went through conversion therapy, but there are things with his queerness that I kind of resonate with as well. Just the kind of bullying and kind of, you know, that inward homophobia, like we mentioned earlier. And so that you know, those two spoke to me in particular. Likewise, I love the game Streets of Rage. It is a game that is near and dear to my heart. I played it with my brother all the time. I love beat-em-ups in general. Side-scrolling beat-em-ups are my thing. And this particular character was a different kind of awakening for me, one that I did not realize I had until I was much older, and I attribute solely to him. And the character's name is Max Thunder. Max Thunder is a playable character in the Streets of Rage series. He is a former professional wrestler who is helping to beat up all the bad guys on the streets, and he's muscly and thick as hell. And if you know anything about me, I like the big boys. I like the bar boys. I go for the bar boys constantly. And they held nothing back in his character creation. So Max Thunder, David Yost, Green Ranger, whose name I've already forgotten. I love y'all. Y'all my boys.
Tommy. God, when he came, I remember seeing pictures when he came back to Power Rangers to be like their like teacher or whatever. And it was like, oh, dang.
Yeah. yes. Jason David Frank. That's right. He, much like Lucy Lawless, aged quite well. He also has like tons of tattoos, which is not necessarily a thing for me, but like done right, I'm also like, all right, we can dig it.
No, that's 100% thing for me.
So yeah, Jason David Frank, congratulations, you're on the list. So that being said, those are our awakenings. I never thought to say this before, but if you have awakenings that you'd like to share, you can always tweet at us, CommyJace Gaming or WK Cooldown on Twitter. It's a fun chat to have, so let's have it. That being said, it is time to take a quick break for some ads. So we're going to do that. Cool. We'll be right back with more show.
Hell yeah.
Ever thought, I wish there was a way to get this idea in my head in drawing form? Well, look no further. Your local artist, Tessica T. Kirk, is here. Tessica is great at D&D characters, emotes for Twitch and Discord, and anything else your brain could possibly come up with. Check out Tessica on Twitter and Twitch at Tessica T. Kirk. That's T. Tessica. Don't get it twisted. Tessica T. T-E-S-S-I-C-A T-K-I-R-K, Tessica T. Kirk, on Instagram, as well at Tessica T. Kirk Art. It was just the word art for the thing that I spelled just now. Go check it out. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the show. So, we've got news.
Happy Pride Month, everyone!
Yeah, right. We've got news. It's not E3 related this time. There's been a big lull in news because of E3, as there is every year. But the lull is over. We've got news. So, we're going to start with some news that happened last week that we kind of mentioned during last week's broadcast, but we did not actually go into because it was kind of breaking news at the time. But we've got more information. We know where we stand. etc. So here we go. Scott Cawthorn, the creator of Five Nights at Freddy's, has announced his retiring following criticism after it was recently revealed that the creator donated money totaling more than $42,000 to Republicans, including President Trump, in the most recent election. Cawthorn said on his website that he has been blessed and with a fulfilling and rich career, but that he also misses spending time with his kids. Cawthorn also alleged, keyword alleged, that he has been shown a tremendous amount of love and support, quote, a lot of which has come from the LGBTQ community. So that's kind of why he's being brought up in this The Gay Month episode.
You can tell he's a Trump supporter because holy shit, that is one hell of a weasel phrase.
Yeah. So like he really
that's like saying, oh yeah, a lot of people support me. A lot of people from big places.
Right.
There's people in the LGBTQ community who support me, Scott Cawthon.
The LGBTs, they love me.
Yeah, exactly.
He's from Boston, isn't he?
The lettuces, the bacons, and the tomatoes, all of them, they're the best.
The lettuces and the bacons. So yeah, I mean, I don't really know who is coming out and saying, like, congrats, Scott Cawthorn, you do what makes you happy. I will say that, like, for as much as I don't care for anyone on the right, like, who you donate your money to is your fucking business. However, it's so ham-fisted to kind of throw that in there and kind of put people in the community on the spot and have to kind of wince at you when you say, yeah, the LGBTQ community loves me. I don't know about that.
And never mind that he gave money to Trump. He gave money to Mitch McConnell. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. Why? Like, why?
Why Mitch McConnell?
Who looks at Mitch McConnell and is like, there's a dude who needs my cash.
That's the guy who needs my money.
The very interesting thing about his donations is, first of all, Mitch McConnell got the most money. Let's, like, point that out. He got $5,000 of Scott Cawthorn's dollars. Everyone else, including Trump, got, like, a middling little $2,000 here or there. But way at the bottom of this list that comes from OpenSecrets.org is a $5 donation to Christina Hale and John R. Gregg, who were running for office as Democrats in Indiana. So, you know, take that as you
so
will.
So he's offered bipartisan support is what I'm hearing.
In a manner of speaking, perhaps.
He doesn't see red and blue.
Crisp Lincoln.
Yeah, right?
He doesn't see red or blue. He just puts his money where he believes. You know what? I can respect that. I respect you, Scott Cawthon. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for keeping the cogs of democracy alive in the United... God damn it.
I don't respect him at all, but...
No.
For no, completely different reasons. I mean, I don't respect him at all for many reasons. This might be one of them.
Yeah. No, what's really sad about this, honestly, is... I was actually, like, at dinner sitting with my roommates, or I think it was actually just Marcy at the time, my one roommate at the time, and we were just talking about different game developers, independent game developers, who we just thought, we hoped were having a good day. We talked about Toby and Edmund McMillen, and we also talked about Scott Cawthon. We were just like, man, look at him go. He's just some dude who just made some games, made a fuckload of money, and has donated it all to charity. That's so nice. And then this came out, and I was just like, well, I feel like a piece of shit. And it's interesting that a lot of people who support Scott Cawthon point at his charitable donations that he's given. And to be clear, he has given millions of dollars to charity. Like, it is an incredible sum of money.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you donated to Mitch McConnell.
Well, it makes you wonder, like, well, which charities? Now it's like you feel like you got to go back and check.
Oh, they were like hospitals and shit. It was good charities. It was all good.
Okay.
Charities. Yeah, those were all legit. But
because it's
you
like
donated
yeah,
to Mitch McConnell.
It's like I always get, you know, antsy, or it's like, you know, was it like that Salvation Army type shit?
I feel like that's one of those things that like it's one of those things that just like completely corrupts your reputation. It's like if you fucking like murder somebody in cold blood, it's like, oh yeah, you donated shoes to orphans and you murdered somebody. You saved thousands of lives, but also you killed somebody in cold blood. It's like you gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to charity and you donated to Mitch McConnell. Like that's the level it is on. That's on to me. I feel like I'm balanced. Yeah. I know I'm ignoring a lot of other stuff. Like, he donated to Trump. I think he donated to Mitt Romney, too. Like, that's up there. I think donating to Mitt Romney is also worse than donating to Donald Trump.
Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell, man.
Mitch McConnell.
Ben Carson, Elise Stefanik, Tulsi Gabbard, even. So, like... He's got two Democrats totaling a whopping $2,505, and then the rest is all Republicans.
So, and also, I mean, like, he released a statement that he was, like, publicly against abortion rights, and I'm just like, man, you're not helping your case here.
Yeah.
Well, he's always been religious. Like, wasn't that his thing? That he
it was.
He made religious... like indie games, and then they didn't sell, and then he's like, I'm gonna make weird horror games instead. So I mean, people shouldn't be surprised about the abortion takes.
I'm not entirely surprised, but you can be religious and not be conservative. I know a lot of people who are like that, and honestly, this is something that I had considered. I knew that he had made Christian games in the past, and I honestly worked under the assumption that he was just a liberal Christian. Like, there are it exists. Like, there are people who are very religious, but also like they're Presbyterians, so like they don't give a shit.
It's shit Scott like Coffin. This that gives me confirmation bias.
It makes sense. There are certain schools of Christianity and schools of thought in other religions that are not like this, and Scott Coffin is not doing it. And it's interesting. So first of all, I want to give a little bit of backstory to myself. So I was raised from the age of like 6 on. Especially from the age of 10 on, by two women. My mom is a lesbian, and she has been in a long-term partnership with her current girlfriend partner for like 20 years now, like 15 years now. And for the longest time, we were a Catholic family. Like, my mom and us, when I was in high school, we were Catholics. I went to church for like 3 years, and my mom had to have a very honest conversation with our priest about, like, being a lesbian. And basically what the priest told her was, like, you can be with your girlfriend, but you can't sleep with her, is pretty much what she said, is what he said. And it was around that point where my mom lost a lot of faith in the church, basically. Mm. And it made sense, and I was kind of with her on that. There are sects of Christianity and sects of other religions that are fairly liberal, and despite what some people might think about Christianity, I'm going to just focus on Christianity because it's what I know. Despite what some people might think about Christianity, not every sect of Christianity is conservative. And if you are a Christian and you are a conservative and you act on this faith as a way to discriminate against and limit the rights of other people, that's a choice. That's not a religious doctrine. Just because that's a choice you've made because you have chosen a school of your religion that enforces these things. Mm-hmm. It is possible to be Christian without being Catholic, just like it is possible to... I'm kind of losing the plot here. But my point is, it's not just religion. Scott Cawthon made an active choice to be the way he is, and that's what makes it despicable above all else to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. You could be religious and not be a dick.
Straight up. Straight up.
You can be religious and not be Scott Cawthon. You're right.
It's true. I don't know why you're repeating the things our guests are saying.
Any last comments, Megan, before we switch the gears?
Nah, I feel like that was the case. I mean, said what I wanted to say.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, I've got some good news for you. We might be back on Kojima's Wild Ride.
Yeah, we might be.
That's much more fun.
And we don't even know. Silent Hill fans have recently been cooking up theories about a potential for a new Silent Hill game. Act surprised if you've heard this one before. The theories seem to have emerged that a new Silent Hill merchandise, it's a skateboard, and from a trailer for a game being created by Blue Box Studios called Abandoned. Blue Box Studios has explained that they have nothing to do with Konami, Hideo Kojima or Silent Hill, but nobody wants to listen, and fans have put together a subreddit called the Blue Box Conspiracy in order to detail what they believe are hints from the studio, Konami and Kojima, about a new Silent Hill game. And this goes deep, let me tell you. Like,
oh God.
There are potential hints from Jeff Keighley involved. They think that the Death Stranding director's cut trailer had hints about the new game. The trailer for the game, what was it called, Abandoned, kind of looks like it might maybe be a little bit of a Silent Hill-ish kind of game. It's a fucking mess.
Yeah.
My favorite thing is that their evidence is that the studio's director, I feel like I'm gonna mispronounce his name, Hassan Karaman, that they said his surname is Hideo translated into Turkish, which is batshit. But apparently, when Metal Gear Solid 5 was being teased, it was announced as a project by Moby Dick Studios, led by Joachim Mogren, with Joachim being an anagram of Kojima. So it's like,
yeah.
See, no, that's
why the, not?
I think that's the problem with being Kojima, though, is that if you've ever played a Metal Gear game, you know that that's something he would do in real life if he had the chance to. So it's kind of an issue of his own making, right? He's spent so many years being this kind of cryptic game maker, game creator, story writer, that now people are like, okay, we are starved for Silent Hill. We know that Kojima's kind of an insane person. Let's latch on to everything we can. Despite the fact that Blue Box Game Studios is, like, begging for people to take a different approach and, like, pay attention to Abandon, the game that they are actually producing, and not Silent Hill, the game that does not seem to be coming out.
Yeah, the problem with this, they're kind of caught in the crosshairs of something that they really didn't want. There's just a lot of dumb coincidences piling up in addition to just, like, a bunch of paranoid and ravenous fanboys on the internet. And yeah, like you said, Kojima did this 10 years ago. The VGA Awards, or the VGAs, the Video Game Award Awards, they announced the Phantom Pain, but it wasn't called Metal Gear Solid The Phantom Pain. It was just a generic trailer for some game that we didn't know about called The Phantom Pain by Moby Dick Studios. And that was the game that ended up being Metal Gear Solid 5. And so that's... I mean, I don't know why anybody thinks Kojima would do this again. I mean,
he's trained people. It's a Pavlovian thing now. Whereas, you know, he's probably off in the mountains with, like, fucking Mads Mikkelsen living his best life.
Yeah.
God, right?
With his boyfriend.
So, I don't think it's a Silent Hill game.
No.
But, like, I do think there's a chance, which is the worst part.
It's like, it's like you can taste it, but you're not sure what you're tasting. I know what you mean. Because it's like, I want to think that maybe there was, deep in some of these conspiracy theories, there is some kernel of truth to it.
Yeah,
but I don't
much.
Think it has anything to do with Blue Box Studios. Like, I really wish they would get away from this poor studio, let them really advertise the actual game that they want to produce, and, like, you know, continue on wanting Silent Hill, or Silent Hills, as it was supposed to be called, and just let these people go. Let them do what they're doing.
It also doesn't help that this is actually their first game, like their first real game. They released, it looks like, a demo for a game back in near Christmas of last year called The Haunting Bloodwater Curse. That looks like it may be a very early version of The Abandoned. That was the name of the game, right? The Abandoned?
Yes.
But, like, Abandoned. I don't know. It's pretty clearly...
The Abandoned is a much better name than The Haunting Bloodwater Curse.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
But if they'd kept that, I bet people probably wouldn't be thinking that it was actually a Silent Hill game.
It's funny how, like, you mess up the timeline by changing your game's name.
Right.
What have you done, Blue Box? What have you done? I want to circle back to the kind of Pavlovian response thing, because the same thing kind of happens to Marvel fans in particular, where they sit through, like, hours of credits to get, like, 2 seconds of what might be like a hint about the next movie or some nonsense like that. It's the same thing here. We're like conditioned by Kojima that, like, there's some nonsense going on. So we're looking and sifting through all of his nonsense to try and figure out if there's something going on, when in reality there probably isn't. And it kind of hurts that you've done this to me, Kojima, and you've made me into a Silent Hill psychopath. I will say there are some really good memes in the Blue Box Conspiracy subreddit, including and not limited to Silent Hill Pro Skater for the PlayStation 1.
God!
It just looks wonderful. It looks great. It looks like it could be real. It's a really deep dive into a niche part of the internet, but if you have a chance to go check out this batshit insane subreddit, it is the Blue Box Conspiracy, and boy is there a whole lot of red string.
We haven't really talked about the skateboard.
In my restless dreams, I see that town, Silent Hill. You promised you'd let me shred there again someday, but you never did.
It should go almost without. Oh, you can't actually see the skateboard. I think they either took it down or it's out of stock. But there was a Silent Hill skateboard. Pre-order started June 23rd, 4 p.m. PST on the Konami shop, and it seems to be gone.
Bummer. Yeah. It had Titty Nurse on it, and honestly, it looked pretty good.
I also feel like it's worth pointing out that technically that's the first Silent Hill content that Konami has put out themselves since PT.
Yes.
Holy shit.
Incredibly worth mentioning.
Because the last official Silent Hill content we got was the Silent Hill chapter in Dead by Daylight, and that wasn't developed by Konami. That was developed by Behavior, of course, in collaboration with Konami. But this skateboard, I mean, is being put out by Konami. I'm sure they're working with a company to actually make the skateboard who actually makes skateboards, but still.
It just seems like a very strange thing to put out a nearly $150 skateboard when there's no kind of other Silent Hill promotional material to be out to coincide with it. So, you know, maybe look out for it, maybe don't. Maybe go browse the Blue Box Conspiracy subreddit, maybe don't. But whatever your choice, you did it, you made it, and you have to live with it. So congratulations.
I was gonna say, you want to talk about living with your choices? I dropped $250 on a limited edition Pokemon skateboard with PanCham on it.
PanCham, okay, but PanCham's wonderful, so that's an investment, honestly.
It's a quality fucking board, I have to say.
I'd probably buy the hell out of that if I had just $250 lying around. Oh, here's one. Here's at least $1.
Well, because I missed the last time they did the limited run with Gengar, and I was like,
oh.
And it's a one and done. They don't repeat.
And Gengar's the best.
Gengar is the best.
PanCham, close second.
You're so close. We are sponsor.
No.
Yeah, it's you're Gengar. Wrong.
It's Gengar. I spaced out. What are we actually talking about?
Gengar's the best. That's what we're talking about.
No, Haunter's definitely the best.
No, you're outnumbered here, man.
It's a little sharp, pointy boy with his little grabby claws. He's a good boy.
Yeah, but then one's a big boy.
Big boy is best. Mouth.
He's great.
I'm sad.
Gengar's
now.
Great. We're going to move along to the end of the show now. And as we do so, we always ask that you give our listeners a recommendation. Which game should they be playing or be on the lookout for? Megan, please start us off.
I play games on a pretty slow curve because I'm bad at them. I did just celebrate Father's Day by picking Hades back up again and giving my goddad a good old murder.
There you go. I mean, I think we can all appreciate the Hades plug. So, yeah. Megan wants you to appreciate both Father's Day and killing your stepfather by playing Hades.
I mean, I'm still playing Pokemon Snap also, if you want to balance that out.
Another good game. A feel-good game where no one dies. Allegedly.
Allegedly. We don't know.
Maybe off screen. Paul, what do you got?
An off-season swallow, so that's me. Non-stop love song, follow you. Wherever you go, I can't wait to catch up before the sun sleeps. Not if you're short of breath. I'm the disaster of passion. Play Guilty Gear Strive. The game's fucking good.
Oh, was that what this was?
That was Disaster of Passion, May's theme from Guilty Gear Strive. Holy shit, it's such a good song. It's like a really catchy pop song. It sounds like a My Chemical Romance song or Green Day or something. One of those types of things. God,
you came in with that song like it was a Facebook ad that I was scrolling by and forgot the sound was on.
I mean, if nothing else, play Guilty Gear Strive for the music. The music is fucking fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's a really good fighting game. If you've never played a fighting game before, well, it's a new fighting game, and a lot of people are learning it for the first time. It's very different from the previous games in the series, so a lot of people are starting from maybe not square one, but a relatively earlier time. Like a relatively earlier square than square fuck you. Go play some fighting games. Go play Guilty Gear Strive. Play Blaze Blue. Street Fighter V.
Tekken. Fighting games is good.
Yeah. Play Guilty Gear Strive. The story is Die Hard.
I'm not gonna play Tekken until I can murder Kirby in the Smash.
Oh, there you go. That's the reverse way to do it, but you got it.
How much E3 news has been talked about on this podcast already? Because I want to talk about Captain Falcon getting dropped off a fucking cliff.
We don't have time, but
no,
I can guess what you're gonna say, and I'm sure the listener can as well.
Captain Falcon got Heihachi'd, man.
I'm going to plug, once again, Aerial Knights Never Yield. It's just a great kind of running, side-scrolling, feel-good game. It's the kind of thing you play when you just need a moment to chill, just want to do something kind of mindless. But it's also very fun. And it's got some really good music, some really good visuals. It's worth a try. Give it a try. It's $11.99 for Nintendo Switch. There's a demo that you can play. It's made by a black person, which is another reason why you should play it and buy it. That's it. That's all the recommendations for games. But there's one more thing you got to do. You got to tell us if you want to be found on the internet and if you have anything else to plug. Megan, please start us off once again.
You can find me on Twitter at @Meg_danger, where, God, I don't even know what I tweet about anymore. Whatever the universe moves me to, frequently pictures of my cats, which, excellent. Yeah, I mean, that's always
that's
a good
reason.
Time. Yeah. pictures of my certainly. Cats, thirst tweets about Pedro Pascal, looking forward to seeing him in the Last of Us adaptation, actually.
Oh, yeah. God, right. That's right. Happening. Yeah. Ooh.
That should be very
grimy Pascal.
Yeah.
Paul, what do you got? Oh, Meg, any last plugs?
Oh, yeah, just, check out Fun Fiction. That's on, I mean, it's, I don't think Scotty pays for a website, whereas wherever podcasts are, it's on Twitter at Fun Fiction Show. You can check out The Weird, that's on Twitter at Joy in the Weird, or at joyintheweird.com, which is probably the best place to go look for it, because you know what? Naming a podcast The Weird was a terrible fucking idea.
Not great for
SEO.
Yeah.
just a real poor decision for SEO. It wasn't my idea. I didn't pick it.
I believe you. I truly do. I feel like I did pick it, but
yeah, I was gonna say, Jace, you know who picked it.
I do. I do know who picked it. But yeah, please check out that show. It's very good. So just do it. Paul, what do you got?
All right. As always, you can find me at Paul's Rockin' Twit on Twitter. You can find me twitch.tv/Bonzi77, where I'm probably going to be streaming a lot of fighting games and Minecraft. Keep an eye out if you want to watch some Guilty Gear Strive, because I will probably be playing some there. Other than that, as always, you can find me in a couple different YouTube channels. I am currently an active member of Voxus, Voice Over Nexus, where I voice Carcat in Let's Read Holmes Duck. And in addition, I have become a regular member of a channel called Sleepy Souls. Make sure I got that right. Yeah, Sleepy Souls, where I am voicing a character in a Persona 3 Abridged series, which is also very fun, and also a couple other miscellaneous projects on that channel. And that should about do it for me.
Very good. Very good. As always, you can find me at Common Jace Gaming on Twitter, and you can find the Weekly Cooldown on Twitter as well, at WK Cooldown. Be sure to visit the Weekly Cooldown Facebook page. Visit WKCooldown.com for more news and other episodes. Be sure to leave a review or comment. I guess they go together. On Apple Podcasts or on Podchaser. You have to do it if you can hear the sound of my voice. You must. It is not a coincidence that we are meeting. Be sure to check out the links in the description below, including, of course, our Humble Bundle for this week and support your favorite charities and support the show. Our logo and art is done by Corgian of Doghouse Esports. Follow Corgian at DoghouseCorgian. That's Doghouse Corgian on Twitter. Our intro music is done by Riki. Find Riki on Twitter as well at DoG_NOISE. That's Dog Noise on Twitter. And that's all for the Weekly Cooldown. I'm Kami Jace.
I'm Paul Leomain, by the way, Henderson.
I'm Megan Danger.
And we will see you next time. Not next week. Next time.
Whatever
Thank
that
you
is.
Very much. Thank you very much for listening. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.